Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
A radio show host called Paul Gallant.
It's Paul Gallant.
Polly G Show. He's the best in Houston.
The most interactive sports radio show in Houston.
Paul, oh, what's good, my man?
How you doing, Paul?
What are you doing, Paul?
Join the devastation by dialing or texting 713-780-3776.
I love the show. Y'all keep it up.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's Paul Gallant.
You are definitely living in the hindsight world today, Paul.
Infield still in on Yiner. Yiner hits one high, hits one deep, he hits one out! Six runs, seventh inning, it's 11-5!
Murder! We talking about murder! Murder! Yeah, I know Houston rap. What's up? Happy Tuesday. It's the Paul Gallant Show, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Hope you had a wonderful Labor Day weekend. If you weren't with us yesterday, we were holding it down. We were a little annoyed that the Astros didn't show up against the Yankees, the last place team over the weekend. But hey, they were just saving themselves for the battle for the Silver Boot, which is now ours! We have acquired the Silver Boot for the seventh straight year! No one on the Astros knows what the Silver Boot is. That was kind of funny to see after the game. Julia Morales interviewing Mauricio Dubon. Hey, what do you think about the Silver Boot? And he was like, what? She just moved on and started to ask another question. But that was a beautiful way to win the season series against Texas, to get the tiebreaker for the AL West against Texas. 13-6, they blew out South Oklahoma and that absolutely hopeless bullpen. As soon as the Rangers starter, Heaney, was out of the game, you knew Texas was bleeped. You knew they were completely screwed. Did you know in the 17 games leading up to yesterday, the Rangers bullpen had a 5.93 ERA in the 17 games before? Methinks that has risen. Just a little bit, Brian McDonald and Rashawn Mapes behind the glass.
But they added Aroldis Chapman. Everything's fixed now.
It's really funny, Brian, that they added him. And
you know the guy the Astros have victimized forever?
Yeah. I hate to baseball-splain, because a lot of people think I know nothing about baseball. I also hate to Houston-splain, because a lot of people know that I'm an outsider. But Aroldis Chapman is our little buddy, right?
That's not the B word I was going to use, but that's probably more FCC friendly.
This is now, Brian, going forward, a family friendly show.
Is it? When did that change get made?
We're doing it today.
Branding.
We're going to see how we like it, and we're going to see if it makes us more money. Because as Brian learned the last time I did this show, I will do anything for money. 713-780-3776. Serious offers only. Challenges. Maybe I'll accept them, including possibly OnlyFans. However, let's bring it back because this was better than OnlyFans last night. You got this for free. Well, actually, you probably have to pay a cable company or Fubo TV way too much money to watch the actual game last night. But the Rangers looked like absolute frauds in this game. And I don't know if it's too early to drop an F-bomb on them, but it's just hard to take them seriously. Because you know, you just got to get through the starting pitching. Even if Corey Seager's a really good hitter, even if they have some bats in that lineup that give you issues like Adolis Garcia, you still just have to get through the fourth or fifth inning against Texas. And you're probably going to be fine. And the Astros have done a great job this season of scoring in late innings. Yesterday, they took it to another level. That was a wacky game. It was a fun afternoon game. And there were moments where you were a little concerned, maybe because of J.P. France not looking like himself, or at least what we hope that he can be. We hope that he can continue to be. He gave up three home runs. You didn't like seeing Ryan Stanek go down because it means you get the bullpen a little bit more taxed. But
you look at this Texas team, and it's really just a matter of can you outscore them? And with the way that the offense has been hitting of late, except for that one series. Well, check that, except for those two series, the one against Seattle and the one against New York. They've been on fire.
Remember, was it Nathaniel Lowe of the Rangers back in like May said that the AL West ran through Arlington? You remember that comment from back? I think it was May. How he was he had his big boy shoes on and he was puffing his chest out talking about where the Rangers were up like I think four games in May and talking about how the AL West ran through Arlington.
Why?
How's he feeling today?
Brian, we are burdened with great knowledge as people who have followed the greatest franchise in recent baseball history. You know, you just know more about the sport, even if you are an idiot like myself. And one of the things that I would encourage people from Texas, the Rangers fans, I guess check that, South Oklahoma, let's be honest, or from Seattle, is that the season is long. And yeah, the regular season matchups don't necessarily matter that much with the Astros taking it officially against Texas. I say that because Seattle has a very, 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 very lopsided lead on the Astros, 8-2 in the matchups between those two teams. But don't do this stuff early. Whether it's the Letterman jacket stuff, it's the Run DMC stuff. BMAC found the audio. This was Nathaniel Lowe saying that the AL West ran through Arlington a couple of weeks ago, or months ago, I'm guessing, right? In May, April, something like that. Here he is.
You know, it's funny you say that because I got on a Zoom call too early in spring training and I watched a certain host at the network talk about how it's Houston's division again and they're going to win the division by 15 games. And I was like, gosh, you know, that kind of pisses me off and I don't want to say anything about it because we haven't even played a single spring training practice yet, but this team's for real. Like the starting staff is for real. There are guys in the bullpen that are competitors. There are guys that will get big outs for us. There's 120 games left or whatever it is, but the division is ours to lose. You can't sleep on the Rangers, man. We're not in contention like coming down the stretch. I would be very, very surprised and say something has gone horribly wrong.
Well, they are in contention. Gosh. That pisses me off. Well, I mean, it's the reality. It's 7 years in a row, man. I mean, this is the expectation every single year is that the Astros are going to win this thing.
I mean, they're little Rangers fans growing up that I've never known their team to win a silver boot. That's a sad world that they live in.
That's very true, Brian McDonald.
And these little five-year-olds running around in Arlington, they've never seen the Rangers win a silver boot.
There's lots of Astros who don't know what the silver boot is. I'm imagining it's the same thing for the Rangers. But, hey, it is the battle for the silver boot. I guess, guys, as the Astros took down the Rangers yesterday 13-6, that team meetings work. Now, I guess they're going about it a different way. You can't have the same team meeting again too close together. So you get swept by the Mariners at home. You got to have a hard smack them around kind of meeting, right? You're essentially getting the bad cop treatment from our fearless leader, Martin Maldonado. He's like grabbing the Joker in the interrogation room. Where are the runs? Where are they? Why was the Yiner Diaz in the lineup? Asking questions like that. And then you do what you did after this Yankees series, which, you know what they did this time? Good cop approach. They did it the nice way. They said that per Yiner Diaz, the veteran stood up and talked and said how bad series are going to happen. But there's still baseball to play. Just stay positive every series, every game. Publicly, Astros players on Sunday emphasized the need to, quote, turn the page, end quote, on an uninspiring weekend. Okay, so one team meeting, turn the page. Following up a team meeting where we got to take things a little bit more seriously. Now, you can't use up all your team meetings by the end of the year.
Well, you can't go in there and yell at them every day, right? You got to mix it up. Some players respond to a kick in the ass. Some respond to a pat on the back.
You're right.
I'm guessing you were the player in high school that responded to a kick in the ass.
I actually did, yeah.
Yeah, that checked my – that was my assumption for you, for your personality type.
I had a coach who wasn't my positional coach at all. Like, he had no jurisdiction over me, and yet he was so good at getting more out of me. He would always call me out. And I remember the one time I got his approval was like it was like getting the approval my dad never gave me.
Do you remember what it was that got you the approval?
Yeah, it was our spring football game. I had like 12 tackles.
But who's counting?
Yeah. He's like, you can play, he said, you can play linebacker for me any day. And I was like, whoa, damn, that's kind of cool. And then I let him down my senior year, probably, by comparison's sake. Anyway, Paul Galacho, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. No one cares about that. I do know there's a lot of people that still are mad at Dusty Baker, and they believe that a game like yesterday kind of compounds the need to move on from Dusty Baker after the season. And you know what? Again, I'm not pushing back. I just don't have the same energy to do it every single day. But someone's got to zag and be the pro Dusty guy, right? Like there's a market for all opinions, all thoughts when it comes to sports talk radio. Someone's got to be the Dusty guy. So, yeah, okay. You didn't see a lot of Chas McCormick over the weekend. But maybe Dusty Baker knew better to rest his best players for the real series, huh? Like it's a bye week, this series against the New York Yankees over the weekend. McCormick, 3 plate appearances this weekend against the Yankees. He was on base 3 times yesterday. Maybe that rest helped Chas McCormick out. Ever think about that?
Maybe we found out Dusty really cares about the Silver Boot. That's what happened.
You're right. You're right, B-Mac. This is like
it
resting.
Totally checks out.
It's like resting starters at the end of the NFL regular season. You're trying to make sure the guys are 100% healthy. Also, okay, well, maybe you wanted to see Yiner Diaz on Sunday. If Yiner Diaz didn't have the day off on Sunday, would he have been able to beat that throw in the fifth? Would he have been able to hustle? Maybe that gave him that just extra little bit, not sitting on his knees for a whole game, that extra little bit to get that extra inch. Would he have been able to hit that home run the way that he did without that day off? I don't know. Load management for Yiner Diaz seemed like it worked yesterday. All you Dusty Baker haters? I mean, is this not a bad argument? Is this not a bad argument?
Dusty's clearly playing chess while everyone else is playing checkers.
100% B-Mac. Look, remember when Chas McCormick got caught stealing second? Well, guess what? Astros wouldn't have hit those back-to-back home runs right after Chas McCormick got caught stealing on the strike him out, throw him out with Yiner Diaz striking out and Chas McCormick getting gunned down. Because if anyone's watched The Butterfly Effect starring Ashton Kutcher and Amy Smart, sup, Amy Smart, if you've seen that movie, you would know that, like, there was a totally different world where the Astros lose that game without Chas McCormick getting thrown out at second base. Again, Dusty's playing like galaxy chess, not even four-dimensional. Is there a fifth dimension? Baker found it.
He found it, yeah.
So there you go, guys. And the Astros.
That is a hell of a theory there, Paul.
Well listen, I mean, you won't...
To quote your intro, you're living in the hindsight now world, Paul.
I'm living in the everywhere site. There's a site behind me.
You've got third sight?
Hey, B-Mac, guess what? I can tell you all the jerseys that are behind me. Look at that. Earl Campbell, Nolan Ryan, Hakeem Olajuwon. Now, some would say it's because you come into work.
Well, there's also a fourth one that you didn't name.
Yeah, well, I mean, listen, I can't see it because I don't want to see it. You know, I just don't.
What do you got against Astros legend?
Larry Durker?
There you go.
Yeah,
you got
yeah,
it.
I got it. Yeah, listen, it took me a second. I
Baseball
forgot.
Paul.
Baseball Paul. Hey, Larry Durker, he's a guy. I interviewed him once. Paul Galacho, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Okay, guys. So we're all feeling really good after what the Astros did to the Texas Rangers yesterday. You're going to feel even better because next you get to bathe in the tears of the Texas Rangers broadcast, who was very, very whiny yesterday. You'll hear all of their misery next. Stick around.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Is it football season yet?
A tug of war. 22 nameless men grappling in the mud. They called it pro football.
Welcome back to the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here is your ambiguously gay host, Paul Gallant.
With another one today. Altuve sends one high and deep to center field. Back goes Tavares. That one's gone. Back-to-back jacks for the second time today. Dubon and Altuve do it twice.
He just silver booted that out of here.
Julia Morales with the color commentary yesterday because Jeff Blum, I guess, got sick. You also heard from Steve Sparks, Waka Flocka Bucks on the Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975, says Sparky on the Astros broadcast was so much better than usual. He did have a funny one-liner. We'll play it a little bit later in the show. So, Astros beat the Texas Rangers yesterday 13-6. We'll see if they actually get an appearance from any starting pitching today. And if Framber Valdez does not lose his mind, because remember the last time against the Rangers, he had a temper tantrum on the mound. I am still a bit frustrated with the starting pitching and the low standards we now have for it. I told you after that quote, bounce back, end quote, by J.P. France after getting shelled by Boston. Last week, I was like, well, I mean, it was okay. It was an okay start. It wasn't anything to really talk home about. It was just a routine day at the office. And yesterday, he gave up 3 home runs. And again, this is a matter of bullpen versus bullpen. The Astros just have a better bullpen than that of Texas. You get to the bullpen against Texas, the game is over. I mean, the Rangers put in positional players for their bullpen towards the very end, and the positional players were more effective.
Yeah, positional player got Yordan Alvarez out.
Yeah, I mean, maybe they should consider an alternative approach the remainder of this series. Look, I have whined about this a lot. I hate how much I pay for Fubo TV so I can stream sports. It's ridiculously priced. I suppose there's really no perfect solution when it comes to streaming, cutting the cord, and being able to watch the Astros. But one of the small perks about subscribing to Fubo TV is that you also get access to the Texas Rangers broadcast. And the last time that we played clips from this broadcast, we highlighted just how whiny they can get. Well, imagine how bad or good for us they sound when a game escalates and escalates quickly. Let's start off with Mauricio Dubon and Jose Altuve going back-to-back early in this game.
It wasn't even close.
That was huge.
Now this pitch hit well. Down the left field line, gone. And Mauricio Dubon on the first pitch just tied the game.
They were just roasting.
And Altuve takes a big swing. High fly deep to left. And for the first time today, the Astros have the lead.
I can just hear the glumness in his voice. They had been making fun of Chaz McCormick for getting gunned down at second base. And legitimately mid-thought, that's when Dubon took it deep. And then to follow it up, Jose Altuve took it deep. It's one of those things where you see that, and if you're the Rangers broadcast team, you know how bad the bullpen is. You are just waiting for the inevitable call to the bullpen by Bruce Bochy, who's probably going to be a little bit irate with the, you know, build up to that.
I mean, how do you possibly spin Dubon hitting 2 home runs off your team? I mean, the guy had, what, like 6 home runs all year?
But he's bigger. He's bigger this offseason. This is what happened.
He worked out with Yordan.
He acquired mass. Yes, he did. They were doing a little, what was that game that they're also playing? They play like backgammon or something.
I have no idea.
They play dominoes and
that,
they bulk
that
up.
That helped him at the plate, apparently?
Yeah, it's the new GTL. It's D, B, I don't know, Z. Jose Abreu was at the plate in the next inning. The bases are loaded for the Texas Rangers. And the Rangers broadcast was witness to a absolutely horrible throw that did not even make it to home plate.
The payoff pitch, and it bounces up there. Ball 4 walks in the go-ahead run.
It was at
fry an egg on the back of Bochy's neck right now.
You could fry an egg on the back of Bochy's neck right now. It was at this point in the broadcast where they started to just get very quiet when bad things happen. And there's these long, pregnant pauses, which allowed me to cackle and cackle quite loudly. A couple of people are commenting, sounded like a home crowd, Minute Maid North. Yeah. I got to say, more people showed up, Astros fans, in Arlington than Astros fans showed up for the series against the Yankees this past weekend.
I know listening on the radio to the part of the game when Dubon and Altuve go back-to-back for the second time, there was a definite home crowd pop. And they yes. even mentioned it on the broadcast that there was more orange than blue and red in the stadium at that time.
100% B-Mac.
It was like a college football game, like at the Cotton Bowl, when either Oklahoma or Texas is up like 50, and you and get that aerial shot, and just half of the stadium is empty.
You just said that because you wanted to bring up that Texas blew out Oklahoma last time? Okay, cool. Yeah. Well, we are talking about South Oklahoma. I read through you, B-Mac, UUT lover. Okay, so that inning began to unravel for Texas after walking Jose Abreu with the bases loaded. It gets better. Again, the Rangers broadcast as their world slowly crumbled around them.
And a bouncer up the middle. Oh, that one gets through. Holy moly. Two runs score, and the wheels are coming off. Good gravy.
Good gravy.
You got a holy moly and a good gravy in the same soundbite. That can't be a sign of things going well.
I wish that they were allowed to cuss. I really do.
Oh, they would have dropped one for sure.
Yeah, what's wrong with that? That's what everyone's
Maybe they are also a family-friendly radio broadcast for the money.
Oh, that's true. That's true, B-Mac. Thank you for reminding me. We almost forgot the first segment. We said that we are now a family-friendly broadcast. Anyway, this continued to get worse and worse for Texas. You thought to yourself, okay, well, they walked a guy home and that error happened. There's no outs. But okay, this is probably going to slow down a little bit. The Astros can't keep it up, can they?
That's hit well, and that's gone.
It just continued.
The entirety of the call is, that's hit well. It's gone.
That's all he said. That's all he said. It's great.
It felt like the audio equivalent of sad college football fans in the stadium whenever they yes. whenever they show that on TV when the team's getting blown out, like I'm sure Clemson had last night.
Ooh, that was also delicious. We'll talk about that a little bit later on. And of course, we were not done seeing the Astros score. They were at 11 runs at that point. Now we're in the ninth inning. Mauricio Dubon's up again. No way Mauricio Dubon can go yard two times in a game, can he?
A six-run seventh for Houston that spoiled the party. This one hit well. Right field. Garcia back near the wall. Leaps, and that one is gone. Dubon has homered for a second time today. Said it earlier, where would they be this year without Mauricio Dubon? May not have needed him today. This ball's hit well. Out to center. That one's gone.
Wait for it.
Jose Altuve has a multi-homer game.
Here it comes.
13-5. Uncle.
Oh, boy. Uncle.
I was captivated by the crowd noise during those home runs. Because, again, it sounds like they're at Minute Maid Park. I mean, the reaction to those home runs was not of a home fan base from the Rangers.
That's true. Look, I think they're also aware that they're probably not going to win. Now, I also am not convinced that Rangers fans, exist, other than our friend Tab, who I hope was not at that game. Because we do like Tab. We don't want Tab to suffer. But I'm not sure that Rangers fans really exist yet. I don't think that Rangers fans are going to be. And there have been some online. I've made a couple of posts. I would say the most traffic I've gotten on the TikTok this baseball season has largely been with posts that involved me talking about the Astros and Rangers. There have been some, but I think for the most part, they are all going to keep quiet until or unless, more likely unless, given their bullpen, the Rangers somehow advance further than the Astros in the playoffs. I don't think we're going to hear much out of them until that happens. And with the way that they are playing of late, the bullpen is worse than you thought it even was at the trade deadline. The post-Letterman jacket era of Texas Rangers baseball. Statistically, BMAC, not good. You actually put together the numbers for the Rangers. And for the Mariners, it's still early since they put on the Run DMC jerseys, but they're 1-3 since then. You told me this yesterday. 4-11 since donning the Letterman jacket.
Yeah, jackets? I went back and found the tweet when they had the picture, and they said they had debuted it the day before being August 19th.
Oh,
and
boy.
Since that point, they're 4-11.
4-11 since then. We told you.
And that's 4-11 with adding Scherzer, with adding Jordan Montgomery, with adding Aroldis Chapman. I mean,
we told you that you don't do the Letterman jacket thing. We know.
Learn from Sean Cody's mistake.
We wore that. We still wear it. That is the greatest football team in Houston Texans history.
Oh, without question.
They were 11-1. And then they pooped their pants down the stretch, and they lost in the first round of the playoffs. Excuse me. They actually won. I forgot about that.
Thank you, Bengals. They beat the Raiders third string. Beat the Bengals.
That was a Bengals Saturday 2.0. Man, they've been in a lot
of... It was like 13-7. It was barely even a game.
They've been in a lot of bad Saturday games over their history. Anyway, speaking of those Houston Texans, hey, guess what? Week one, right around the corner. DJ Bienaimé is going to join me to talk about it. And we'll continue to play highlights from the Astros kicking the Rangers' ass yesterday. Silver boot! It is ours! Das Boot! Paul Gawant Show, stick around.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. We're your daddy.
Well, I feel like I'm your daddy.
You're not my daddy.
No,
daddy.
Hush, now I'm your daddy.
You ain't my daddy, boy.
Yes, yeah, I am.
You are not our daddy.
I am your daddy.
Not a daddy.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's Paul Gallant. Join the conversation by dialing or texting 713-780-3776.
God, what his family's goal was for. How about Mauricio Dubon sending this one to right field? This one to Dubon! A multi-home run game! Mauricio Dubon, he might want to be interviewed by Julia. It's 12-5.
Doobie, do it.
Whoa, 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 whoa.
Doobie, do it.
Get that one more time?
Doobie, do it.
Are we being a professional radio broadcast by isolating
Doobie, do it.
That little spot and
does it fit the family branding that we're now putting upon the Paul Gallant Show?
I think it does. I don't know. The way that she said it's very charming, and I like it. I just like hearing Julia Morales say doobie do it. What's wrong with that? Anyway.
Sounds like that did something for you.
Doobie did.
Doobie do it.
Actually, for me, someone texted in on the most interactive sports talk show in Houston. He's frustrated because I never answer his questions. To Paul, the ambiguously gay host, better date Margot Robbie or Bradley Cooper? Come on, people. Margot, stop. Stop. We all know the answer to that one. There's not even a question. Some more comments here. H-Town and Dame. Oh, God, a Golden Domer. Went to that game yesterday. It was badass. Two idiots behind me just yelled cheaters all game. Got to shove that crap in their faces. It was so beautiful. And a couple of people are texting me online. Hey, Paul. We have a solution for you to get around the whole Fubo TV thing. We have DJ Bienaimé in studio right now. He's getting a chair. DJ, if we were on Tom Coughlin time, you would be in trouble right now. But I appreciate you joining us here on the Paul Gallant radio program and the Talkin' Texans podcast program. And here we are the day after the Texans announced their captains. CJ Stroud's a captain. Jalen Petrie's a captain. Laramie Tunsil's a captain. And on top of that, Jimmy Ward's a captain.
Should fans care if who are named the captains?
I don't think they should necessarily. But I do always find it interesting when a team does not name their quarterback a captain. I always feel like that's a bit of a red flag. The Falcons did not name Desmond Ridder their captain.
That's a red flag.
The Cardinals did name Kyler Murray, one of their captains, though I guess you kind of have to because you're hoping that he stays around and doesn't play video games while he can't play.
I think it only matters if the quarterback isn't named the captain. Like 2021, the Dolphins, they didn't name Tua their captain, and like before you knew it, they were trying to trade for Deshaun. So like, I think it only matters if the quarterback isn't named the captain for like, you know, like fan discussion fodder perspective. Because, I mean, he's going to be a quarterback. He's usually going to be, like, one of the best players on the team. And then, like, two other guys that are standout leaders, you know? So, I mean, most teams, it's usually, like, the best players on the team and the quarterback. So.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, I'm with you there in that it's not that big of a deal.
Nah.
But you do notice when the guy isn't the guy. So, I guess that is a nice little green flag for C.J. Stroud.
Players care about being named captains, though. Like, Laramie has told me a bunch of times that he wanted to be a captain. Like, that meant a lot to him.
But, oh, that's interesting. Yeah. Because, okay, so, look, I don't know what's going on in Laramie Tunsil's head. I just know what the Texans fan base was complaining about a lot, I would say specifically going into last year. It was a wondering whether or not Laramie Tunsil was really in it with this team. And I was always like, okay, I mean, he was on a bad team. I think a lot of people were kind of burnt out by the last 2 years. That is, and obviously he just signed that long-term extension. Is that something that you ever sensed your first couple of years covering the team?
That he wanted to be here long term, or
that he maybe wanted to be on a contender or something like that.
Oh, I mean, yeah. I mean, every player wants to be on a contender. Like, he even said, like, he wants to win the Super Bowl. He said it on the pivot. He wants to eventually win the Super Bowl. I think most players, like, the first part of the career, they want to produce and get the bag, right? Then the second part of their career is, I still want to get the bag, but I want to start winning. And then that last stage is where they care way more about winning. Like, I mean, if you're an athlete, in all honesty, like, the number one goal should be to get paid. Like, winning is cool, but, like, in reality, you can't pay bills with a Super Bowl ring.
No.
Like, you can't pay bills with that. So, like, the number one goal should always be paid. And that usually is the number one goal for most guys. Produce early, get paid, and then we can worry about the winning later on. And I completely, you know, understand that, because, like, how often do you remember the guy that's the 53rd man on a Super Bowl contender? Like, I can't tell you who's the 53rd guy on the Kansas City Chiefs, you know? Even though they say, oh, if you win the Super Bowl, you become immortal. Yeah. That's for, like, the best of the best guys. Like, Mahomes is immortal. Andy Reid is immortal. Travis Kelce immortal. Chris Jones. But, like, the backup safety, I can't tell you who it was.
Maybe they should start doing what they do with the Stanley Cup. In the Stanley Cup in hockey, every player who wins the Stanley Cup, his name gets etched into the Stanley Cup. So maybe every Super Bowl trophy.
But I wouldn't still, we wouldn't remember.
But it's slightly more immortal because it's put in a piece of metal. Slightly,
I mean,
more.
Technically, you're on a roster that won a Super Bowl, so I can still find you online if I really want to. But again, like, players, they care more about getting paid first. So, but back to the original point, though, I think Laramie, obviously, he wants to win, he wants to contend, but I mean, he's not gonna pass up getting a bag. To
no
contend,
doubt,
you know,
he's gotten paid twice too.
Right,
he's gotten the bag twice. Now, definitely, you would want to focus on winning a championship.
Right. It's always like you always peep it. Like, it's towards the latter half of their career when they're like about to be 30 or past 30. But even then, like, D-Hop could have went to the Bills or the Chiefs, but, like, they weren't paying him what he wanted. So he went to the Tennessee Titans, who I think will still be good. I think they'll win the AFC South. I'm on record saying that.
You're filling in that.
Like, he still wasn't going to pass up tens of, like, you know, $5 to $6 million. That's a lot of money. You know, I know people make it seem like $5 million isn't that big of a guy. That's a lot of money to pass up.
For me, a talk show host, DJ, actually, that isn't that much.
I remember, like, me and my friends in that, you know, that chat where, you know, I told you about last time.
With the crazy takes.
The crazy takes. We were talking about, like, Dalvin Cook choosing between the New York Jets or the Miami Dolphins. And when you do all the taxes based off what the Miami offered and what New York offered, I think it was like a $1.5 or $2 million gap after taxes. And I'm like, hey, man, that's a lot of money.
Yeah, it is a lot of money.
Yeah.
Also, it's New Jersey versus Miami.
Right, but still, like, a $2 million after taxes for Dalvin to go to the Jets is still a big, big, big gap.
I got you on that. Yeah. I'm just thinking, like, you're crazy to pick New Jersey over Miami.
Yeah, but
we're still Florida guys. We are Florida guys.
Yeah,
we are Florida
men. Hey, I'm with you.
Yeah.
But that's still $2 million.
Yeah.
Like I remember driving
You gotta live in Hoboken or something like that.
And that's still $2 million. I remember driving yesterday thinking, man, the gap like $1 million and $2 million, that's really a big gap. That's like a gigantic, like,
it's,
I would think
big.
About like, dang, like, imagine the amount of extra stuff you can do with $2 million versus $1 million.
I think Astros outfielder Kyle Tucker has been thinking about that because they basically stiffed a $2.5 million in arbitration on him this offseason. But that's baseball. We'll bring it back.
You know,
we'll bring it back. But to your point, baseball, it's the same thing.
Is
same
baseball
thing.
A sport? No, I'm playing.
That was DJ said it. Many people think I believe it.
My first ever sport I played was baseball.
Really?
Yes, but I was the stereotypical black guy as a kid.
Outfielder?
I, could, and I couldn't hit, but I could still bases.
And, okay. That's hilarious. Okay, so something else to note, big deal or no big deal, because we are in the dead week. We just want to get the first game on us. I don't know if you paid attention to Ohio State week one. I saw some people making a big deal about this, but did you notice, DJ, that Ohio State had a tough time moving the football against Indiana? They were 14th in passing yards game in 2022, 65th week one, 9.5 yards per pass in 22, which I believe was second or third, 6.6 yards per pass week one. Again, one game, one sample size, but maybe this is the Ohio State quarterback that Ohio State can't make it work without, said some Texans fans online, and not me.
Lord. I mean, it's just one game. Like, what? It's one game. Like, Ohio State, they'll eventually figure it out.
But this was the Ohio State quarterback, DJ. Come on, work with us now. Come on, let's pump those tires up. Put some gasoline on that fire.
I can't get there. I can't get there. Because, like, there's no correlation between that and how good CJ is going to be. We knew CJ was great at Ohio State. Like, it's hard to replace that. But, like, they'll be fine.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, fine. Well, I'm just digging through the internet for some crap content, bro.
I get that. Like, you know, I understand digging. I understand.
Do you want some more manure shovel on the desk?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, what's your next dish of manure?
DJ Tank Dell, he changed his number
from 7
from 13 to number 3.
So that
does
means,
that mean Mike Evans is coming to the Texans?
That discussion is so, it's like this makes no sense.
I love it though.
It's so when I scroll on Twitter and I see people discussing like Mike Evans coming to the Texans, I'm always like, okay guys, you think Mike Evans, who had been contending for divisional championships and Super Bowls for the past like 3 seasons, who wants to compete for Super Bowl is going to come to the Texans?
Well,
who has 11 wins in the last 3 years.
But think about it from this perspective.
Mike Evans won a Super Bowl his first year with Brady.
That's true.
More wins than the Texans had the past 3 years.
And he also had a long stretch of his career.
Yeah, do you think he wants to go back to that?
Well, think about it from this perspective. How many situations are better than that of Tampa Bay's this year? And Tampa Bay does have talent. But from a quarterback perspective, I mean, was that not the most depressing quarterback competition? Baker Mayfield, the artist formerly known as Baker Mayfield versus Kyle Trask.
Yeah, for sure. But like, why would he then like, all right, I want to go to Houston? And again, like from a football,
he is from Galveston.
Asset standpoint, why would the Texans give up assets when they could just get him in free agency next year?
That is the great question, and I don't think that there's any rationalization for it.
No.
And I would also wonder about, like, okay, well, how much are you going to be willing to offer for a wide receiver who's going to turn, I think, 31 as the season begins, especially considering the fact that the New England Patriots, and you have to assume that Nick Caserio's track record in New England, even if he wasn't the one making all the decisions, that there's probably some things, philosophies that he brought from there to hear. That team never paid a wide receiver. You know, they bring in Randy Moss, it's because they got him on a discount. It's Rob Gronkowski, but they're paying him, like, tight end money as opposed to wide receiver money.
I don't think Nick could operate with that approach, though, mainly because he doesn't have the greatest quarterback to ever live on his roster. Like, Bill could get away with that because he had Brady, who could legitimately elevate the people around him until like the latter half of his career. Like 2019 was a prime example where he couldn't do that anymore. So like, Nick should be smart enough to realize, I don't have the greatest quarterback to ever live, or at least, you know, a top 5 guy to ever live who could consistently do that. So I don't think his approach should be that. And the game has changed vastly. Like, when Brady was at his peak, towards the end is when receivers became way more valuable. But throughout that long stretch of his career, like, you could get away with, I don't mean we're average, but above average receivers and be just fine. Obviously, when he got Randy, like, that's when he took it to a whole nother level. But you didn't have to pay top of the market value at receiver to have a prolific passing attack. Now you do. Like, everybody that has a prolific passing attack has a high paid weapon, whether it's the Kansas City Chiefs with Travis Kelce or Buffalo Bills with Stephon Diggs. Justin Jefferson is going to get paid $30+ million per year. The Dolphins with Tyreek Hill. Like, if you want a very viable passing attack, you have to pay top dollar for those receivers.
He is DJ Bien-Aimé, ESPN beat reporter for your Houston Texans. I am Paul Gallant. Paul Gallant Show, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Speaking of Nick Caserio, there were some comments that he made a week ago we have not had the chance to talk about together. And we'll take a look ahead at the Texans' first game of the year against the Baltimore Ravens, plus the Astros. They took down the Rangers 13-6. First, though, I got to tell you about my friends at mybookie.ag. Okay, well, maybe you didn't want to sign up the way that I did for Travis Hunter for Heisman. Uh-oh, it's plus 3,300. It was plus 3,500 yesterday at mybookie.ag. Promo code BET975. You want to sign up today for a sweet little deposit bonus. Okay, well, maybe you're focusing on what happened on Sunday. You saw Florida State absolutely smoke Louisiana State University and Brian Kelly in his fake accent. Well, maybe you're looking at a guy by the name of Jordan Travis who looked almost as good as Shedeur Sanders did. He is plus 840 to win the Heisman. MyBookie.ag is where you want to go today. You want to bet on professional football, you can do it there. College football, you can do it there. We got futures bonuses like you have for the Heisman. There's bonuses for people who are already existing customers. MyBookie.ag. Start having fun by betting on anything, anytime, anywhere, even live casino betting with real dealers. It's MyBookie.ag.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Now with more nougat.
You're not cooking.
Pork chop sandwiches.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's Paul Gallant. Join the conversation by dialing or texting 713-780-3776.
Infield still in on Yiner. Yiner hits one high, hits one deep, he hits one out! Six runs, seventh inning, it's 11-5!
Astros took down the Rangers 13-6 last night. They win the coveted silver boot. How about that? In studio with me right now, Houston Texans beat reporter for ESPN, DJ Bien-Aimé, brought to you by the Golden Nugget and Houston Powder Coaters. Okay, DJ, we did not have a chance to touch on this last week. There's a lot of people that are frustrated with Nick Caserio, thinking that he has perhaps bungled this Kenyon Green situation, specifically pointing to DJ, how in that press conference where they said, hey, we're focusing on 2024 for Kenyon Green, a day after both he and D'Amico Ryans had sort of hinted at like, hey, there's other stuff going on behind the scenes with Kenyon Green. He also said that in May, they knew that this was something that they were probably going to need surgery to perform surgery on. I guess what's your takeaway from this entire thing? I think a lot of people have been focusing on Nick and using this as a reason to be frustrated with Nick. I get the frustration. I'm not 100% sure, though, that the frustration is necessarily fair because it's a two-way street, right, when it comes to surgeries with players?
Yep. Yeah, I mean, I think that's one of those incidents when people want to be upset about something and they don't know how to express it, so they just pick it at the most, I guess, favorable target. Because in reality, as you said, it's a two-way street. Like, Kenyon Green has to, one, agree to get the surgery. And if he felt that he could play through it, he probably thought, okay, that's something I could probably put off until the offseason, shaping up the things around my shoulder to when the season gets here, I should be okay. And it gave out in the last preseason game. I mean, he was fine.
Yeah, looked bad.
Yeah, he was fine for the first few weeks. I mean, throughout all training camp and through the first two preseason games and through a whole half until, like, the last half. Last drive of the second half. So I get why people are frustrated because it's more of like a recurring theme where it's like Kenyon Green can't stay healthy, things of that nature. Now people are starting to dive into the bust discussion.
The B word, yeah.
You know, into the weight of bad draft pick and things of that nature. And obviously we still have to pump our brakes because it's only year one. And I don't think it's fair to put the bust label on a player who's only played 1 year. I get it. Yes, he's not going to play the majority of his second year. He's not actually going to play any of his second year. But again, like 2 years isn't enough of a sample size to label somebody a bust. Now, if somebody starts off great, cool, you can do that. Even if someone starts off really bad, you have to give guys every opportunity to show, especially when they're drafting the first round, you do everything to try to make it work. Because again, players develop at slower rates. We talked about on the last time I was on how offensive linemen, that's one of the toughest positions to transition from the college to the NFL. Yeah. So that's why I have sympathy and I have empathy for Kenyon Green, because he's in a tough position, and obviously he's obviously dealing with stuff outside of football that D'Amico's alluded to, that Nick has alluded to, that, you know, we have to also be sensitive and treat with fairness in regards to Kenyon Green.
Right. There's got to be a little empathy here. And I know some people are probably even prying even further at this point. You know, I mean, that's the way it is. It's unfortunate for him. It just seems like there's a lot of just bad timing and bad luck on his part right now. I hate to throw out the bust word. I think you got to really like not give a crap if you're going to be labeled that. Like, it has to be not a byproduct of injuries or something like that. Injuries happen. It's a violent game. I think it has to be a byproduct of just a lack of care. I don't think that's been the case with Kenyon Green, but you do wonder now. And,
yeah, of course. It's fair to wonder.
And I think, DJ, a lot of people are now starting to – I think this is just a lot of people who are tired of Patriots South, and Nick Caserio is the easy pinata as a target for. And I do get them. I'm not telling them that they're entirely wrong here, but – they're going to use Kenyon Green as an example. They might even start using John Metchie as an example, which is also, I think, a little bit over the top. Let's talk about some of the trades that have been made for using late-round draft picks that haven't worked out so much. And then, of course, you go back to the first year's draft class where, you know, there's no Roy Lopez anymore, and there's been a lot of changes and turnover. And I think all of that has led a lot of people to be tired of Nick Caserio, whether fair or unfair. That is the general sentiment.
Yeah, I mean, it's fair to be tired of Nick. Like, I can't act like a fan who's tired of Nick or is impatient with the results that they've seen. I can't act like they're tripping for feeling that way. Because, again, like, the product hasn't been what you would want. But this was the first offseason where he wasn't saddled with dead cap, had some draft, you know, some legitimate draft assets. Even though he had some last year, but he had more draft assets and more money to build on the draft class from 2022, even though there were some highs and some lows, but I think you have to give him a little bit more time because, you know, this is going to be, like, I think 2024 is when you can truly demand and have high expectations for the Texans club based off of what he walked into.
So going into 2024 is what you're feeling. Yeah, okay. Yeah. I think after the year, say this is a disaster.
If it's a disaster now, we have to have.
He's on the chopping block.
Yeah.
It's a disaster. It has to be like an absolute disaster, I think, for them.
Right.
With all the instability they've had the last couple of years to pull the trigger on somebody else.
What would constitute as a disaster for you?
A disaster would probably involve a CJ Stroud injury. With all that money invested in the offensive line and an absolutely disastrous year. It would be more like, okay, not only did you fail to protect the guy, the rest of the roster isn't very good either. And you've put a lot of money into Titus Howard. We'll see if he's able to go week one. Shaq Mason, did you need to sign Shaq Mason to that contract before he plays a snap for you? And I mean, Laremy Tunsil, we all know, is the best left tackle, one of the best left tackles in the NFL. That's but fair. at center and guard, left guard right now, you're like, wow. No one knows, really, truly. Going into week one on Sunday, we have no idea who's going to be suiting up at those two positions against Baltimore.
Yeah, that's
fair. So it starts there. And I think it really has to be like 2-win, 3-win season or something like that for Caserio to be out where it doesn't feel like you've even taken another step forward.
Yeah. I think,
it's all about the vibes of making some progress.
Yeah, if he wins three or four games, then like we have to have a discussion.
Yeah.
Like, okay, does he have to go? Because like you can walk with your shoes untied in the NFL and trip your way to 4 wins.
That's true.
So if you in year 3 are still basically a 3 or 4 win team, what have you done?
Yeah.
You know, because at the end of the day, it's I know it's a process-driven business, as he said. And when he said, like, we don't control our record, it's a process-driven league. But that means after 3 years, your process stinks. You know, like, after 3 years, you have, right now, as a general manager, he's 7-25, 26-1. Is that 25-1 or 7-26-1? One of those two. If by year 3, you're at 11 wins, then it's like,
yeah.
You know, like, your process stinks.
Week 1, stinky matchup for the Texans, Baltimore Ravens. You have Lamar Jackson and a new Todd Monken offense. He has, at the very least, better receivers than he's had in years past. We'll see what Odell Beckham Jr. can do, but everyone's raving about their rookie first-round pick, Zay Flowers, from Boston College, the wide receiver. We know that Jadeveon Clowney's on that team now. We know that defense is pretty competent, and that a John Harbaugh coach team is usually pretty well coached. I guess, where are you at when it comes to this game? Are you expecting a competitive Texans appearance in Baltimore, or is this going to be a long Sunday?
So, for me, it really comes down to, can the defense play up to their potential and slow down Lamar? For what it's worth, I think the D'Amico Ryan slash Solid Tree has had success against Lamar, because even like the Jets last year, week one, even though Lamar threw three touchdowns, he didn't go crazy with his legs, and they held him 24 points. And then the year Lamar won MVP, the 49ers held Lamar in that offense to 17 points. They held him to under 110 yards passing. I think he went 14 for 23 for 105 yards, but he rushed for like 110. So they held him basically to under 250 yards of total offense. So like that, I guess that scheme or tree has not necessarily like the formula to stop Lamar, but they can limit him the best as you can based off of what, you know, those two game sample size. Even though it's a small sample size, but right. D'Amico was also on that staff. But the issue is Lamar week one, you know, 2019 against the Miami Dolphins had five touchdowns against the Cleveland Browns in 2020. He had three touchdowns. Then against Las Vegas in 2021, he only had one touchdown pass. But I believe in that game, he threw for 225 yards, and I believe he rushed for a lot. Yeah, he rushed for 86 yards. So he had over 300 yards of offense. And then I believe last year, again, he had three touchdowns passing.
Did you feel like Greg Roman was holding back Lamar Jackson's development as a passer? Because I did.
I don't think he held back his development as a passer. I think he held back the Ravens' passing attack, if that makes sense. Like,
okay.
I think Lamar, if you put him in a different type of offense, he could still attack down the field and pass the ball with efficiency, because like Lamar's a good passer. I think just overall, it's weird, because when Greg Roman first gets a quarterback that's mobile, that those first couple years,
Kaepernick,
it goes crazy.
Yeah,
even with Tyrod Taylor, like he had a Pro Bowl year with Tyrod Taylor. It's like after that first or second year is where everybody starts to catch up.
Exactly, it's like there's no progression, and I think to make a comparison to here in Houston, when Wade Phillips takes over a defense, it was generally the same thing. And when Wade Phillips took over the Texans defense in 2011, oh my God, they turned the page. They were awesome for a couple of years. But then in 2013, all of a sudden, it hit the fan.
Right, exactly. So I think that's the only that's my only trepidation. I used to argue about it all the time in my crazy chat. I used to always say it's not the receivers for Lamar, it's the scheme, because the scheme doesn't allow the receivers to develop and put the receivers in positions to make plays, to where we can now think that receiving core is a lot better than what we thought. So we had that debate for the entire year. I came out victorious at the end. Could they let Greg Roman go? They won't give me the dub, but I won that argument.
You're taking credit.
I'm taking credit for that dub. So it really comes down to that week one. Can that defense limit Lamar and make it a one-possession game in the fourth quarter? Because I already know the offense is going to have its ups and downs.
It's
Charles' first start. You know what I'm saying? Like, you can't – like, if he goes out there, throw for 300 yards, they put up 30 points, great.
Parade.
But if that's the expectation, that's unfair.
Yeah.
Like, the expectation should be, like, they should have 13 points going into the fourth quarter. And then the defense holds the Ravens to, like, 17 or 20 points, because they also have a first-year offensive – not first-year offensive coordinator – but the first time they're going to be in that system. So there's going to be some work, moving pieces and things of that nature. So if you can keep it close now, that fourth quarter, we always see it. Like, if the game is close in the fourth quarter, crazier things have happened.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, like you go from having the number one overall draft pick to the number two overall draft pick. Sometimes.
Because, you know, somebody could please a pass on 4th and 20, you know, so.
I was happy they won that game. I don't care what anyone
says. Yeah, it was fun to watch it and watch the meltdown on Twitter. Like, people were absolutely.
They beat the Colts. F the Colts. God, you people. He is DJ Bien-Aimé. Check out his work at ESPN. I'm Paul Gallant. It's the Paul Gallant Show, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. More reveling in the despair of the Texas Rangers after the Astros won the Silver Boot. Das Boots with a 13-6 victory yesterday. Stick around.